Well, it's always the case when I'm speaking to people who have some acquaintance with Scripture, I sometimes wonder what I have to say. And then I frequently wonder, what do I have to say that's new? And every time I do that and have that thought, this wonderful recollection comes. When I was concerned about this when I was living in residence long ago, and I maybe even told you this story here, a student a little bit ahead of me said, the thing you need to remember is that you're not there to talk about things that are new. You're there to talk about the truth. And if people have heard it before, that just means that they've heard it again. And there's nothing wrong with that. So as I was thinking about what to do with this particular story and where to go, one of the things that Norma mentioned was that she was going to go sort of in the next stage or the next few weeks, I don't know how long, she's going to be talking to people or asking people to come and talk about what it means to live a good life or to have a life well lived at whatever stage they happen to be at. Because that's one of the things that Abraham is an example to us, as is Sarah. Lives well lived. And we tend to think, when we think of Abraham and Sarah, when they cross our mind, we think of the high points, and there's nothing wrong with thinking of the high points. We think of Abraham demonstrating his faith with his son Isaac. We think of Sarah and her exultation at having a child late in life. We think of all of these things, which are extraordinary. Between the two of them, they lived about 300 years. We can name all the extraordinary things that happened in their lives. We can count them off on the fingers of one hand. What did they do for the rest of the time? They did exactly what all of us do for the rest of the time. They lived their lives, following God as best they could, doing a pretty good job as far as we can tell, but almost certainly making mistakes along the way, doing things that they wished they wouldn't have done, having those moments that they think, I really wish I had a time machine. Not to go back and pick winning lottery numbers, but to go back and not do that stupid thing I did. It hurt somebody's feelings, it embarrassed me, whatever it might have been, but that's what they were. And there were flashes of miracles in their lives. But we do them, God, and us a disservice if all we think of is the miraculous. Because if that's what we think their life was summed up in, miraculous lives lived at a level that we can never achieve, then they have nothing for us. The fact that we don't know what happened other than that just means that it was completely normal. The highs and lows of married life, the highs and lows of raising children, the highs and lows of living with neighbors who don't always agree with you, who don't think the way they should, and if they only listened to you, then they would know what to think. Sound familiar? Of course it does. Because that's the life that we are called to live. And as I was thinking of Norma suggesting that some people would come and talk about a life well lived, I thought, well, I'm not going to bring my life to this crowd. Little pittance of life that I've got, barely getting out of the early stages. And I thought instead of my mother, not my stepmother, not Norma, but my mother. My mother, Angeline, was born and raised in Saskatchewan. She was born in 1927, so she lived through the Depression, as perhaps some of you recall, an unpleasant time to be living on a farm in southwest Saskatchewan. We were just there. We had a family get together, and me and my three brothers went to the farm that she grew up in. The house is abandoned, but it still has rich memories for us, and we walked around and we told stories, and our kids followed us with open ears, to say the very least, wanting to know what we'd done. But that's where my mother was. That's where she started, and she had a normal life. A full life, not as full of years as we would have liked. She died when she was 63, which I thought was young when it happened, and now it just seems criminally young. And yet, I look at that life, and depending on which angle you approach it, it looks like a painfully ordinary life. She grew up, went to school in a little town called Aneroid, named because some railroad person, no doubt, dropped an aneroid barometer and somebody found it and said, well, what a great name for a town. Maybe, maybe not. She came to Regina for her further education, ended up going to what was then WCBI, then became Canadian Bible College, and is now Ambrose University off in Calgary. And from there, she was called to come up to the Peace River country, up to Dawson Creek, to help with the work there. My mother was tremendously musical, and Walter Bolt needed a choir director. So she was up there. And that's where she met my dad. And they got married. They were a little bit older when they got married, but they got married, and then over the course of time had 4 boys. In many ways, I'm the smallest of them, so you can just imagine what she had to go through. From there, we moved to Alberta, sort of splitting the difference between the two. We grew up. I eventually came here. In a sense, what do we have to say? She was a pleasant woman, loved by her friends, of which she had many. She died early on a Sunday morning. She died at 2 a.m. So, of course, there was no possibility of sort of announcing when funeral arrangements were going to be and that sort of thing in the Sunday morning service. It was a sizable church. So we didn't know what was going to happen at the funeral. Well, somewhere between 400 and 500 people showed up because they'd heard. She had an extraordinary impact, not just on me, because when we look at her life from that other perspective, when we look at her life from, well, that lens that we put on Abraham and Sarah, we say, well, was the miraculous ever there? Yeah, I think so. I mean, we're all miracles in our own way. I, perhaps, more than some. My mother found out she was allergic to penicillin when she was carrying me, went into anaphylactic shock and died. She survived, obviously, because I have 2 younger brothers. Oh, sure, it's, you know, the medical profession doing its thing. I look at that as a little miraculous. And you look at a life and you wonder, well, Abraham and Sarah, of course, through Isaac, but Abraham had this tremendous influence. Even though they only had the one son that we know of, look what happened through Isaac, to Jacob, and then on to everything. And I just think, well, I remember once, I'll tell a story about another denomination. The Christian Missionary Alliance is what my mother grew up in, what I grew up in, or what she came of age at. And at a general assembly once, it was in Edmonton, and there was a mass choir that I sang in and all that. And so I got home a little bit later than my parents, and I walked in and I could hear all this laughing. And so I went in, stuck my head in, went to my older brother's room and said, if we have a gas explosion, the Christian Missionary Alliance loses all of its leadership in one fell swoop. The president was there, the vice president was there, 4 of the 5 district superintendents were there, and the pastors of 3 of the 5 largest churches were there because it was Angie's house and they wanted to get together because she had that kind of an influence. Did she stand up and make speeches? No. But she affected people. They were better because they knew her, because that's what they've told me whenever I run into them. She died in 1990. People still tell me what an influence my mother had on them. And it's not just those people, those religious kinds of people who, you know, have an effect in a small subculture. And obviously she wasn't changing the world, but a number of years ago, my mother came to visit me when I was in college. It was one of the few times that she was able to get there. Not because she was unwell, but because she was incredibly busy. She came to visit me, and we were bringing my dad along, of course, and we had a special performance. It was a fundraiser. And so from across the crowded lobby of the Simpson Chapel, the star of the performance shouted, Angie, and ran over, and Ben Heppner came over and said, this is the woman who taught me how to sing. Mother said, no, I just gave him a place. And he said, no. Ben Heppner is also in a smallish circle. But if you move in sort of serious music and broadcasting, you've probably run into Ben Heppner at least once or twice. Probably the greatest heroic tenor of our generation. got his start under my mother. Was it all easy for my mom? No, I don't think so. In 1983, my mother was troubled with cancer for most of her life, and all of mine, at one point or another. And in 1983, she was extremely unwell. And the boys, because 1983, nobody told their kids anything, at least not when they were busy. We all thought she was going to die. She didn't. And in 1983, my older brother was in a sort of serious relationship. I was a high school dropout. My two younger brothers were going through their own struggles. It was a tough time in our family, not just because Mom was sick, but because I was in there and I was a problem. My brothers were less of a problem because I was the star of the problems. But we were just at that age, early 20s, late teens, it's a tough time. When my mother died, 7 years later, and only months before she died, talked about these being the best years of her life. All three of my brothers were married. I was in a serious enough relationship that we were already planning a wedding. We hadn't actually gotten engaged yet. The high school dropout was an outstanding student at Bible College, getting ready for, the plan was a career as a professional minister. We'd all turned around. And so when I think of my mother and I think of the miraculous, when I think of her effect, when I think of what God worked through her, I sometimes think that one of God's gifts to her was those extra 7 years so she could see her boys turn out. She loved us more than we knew and probably more than we deserved, as most mothers do. And when she was in the hospital in her last days, on Wednesday, the doctor said, you should call people because she won't last tonight. But only three of the four of us were there. So with God's help, she waited until my youngest brother arrived on Saturday, and she died the next morning. An ordinary life, as so many of them were. But touched by God in the miraculous, as we all are. We look at Abraham and Sarah and we say, oh, if only we could be like them. But we can. Because Abraham is applauded in the book of Hebrews, not because of the things he did, but because of the faith he had in God. It's a faith that has brought us this far and will carry us to the end, as it did for Abraham, as it did for Sarah, as it did for my mother. Because a life well lived isn't measured in things. It's not measured in money. It's not measured in years, even. It's measured in what it means to follow a loving God, to be part of what He wants us to do, to take the role that only we can do. I sometimes think my mother could have gone other places. But she was called to raise me and my brothers. And for that, I'm tremendously grateful. The congregations that I preach to every Sunday are pretty grateful too. My wife and kids are grateful. My grandkids are grateful. Not because she was a spectacular example of anything, really, but because she was a faithful woman, faithful to her call, and faithful to her God. So really, we have a pantheon. We have this Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And yes, they're important, and we need to remember those names. But take a moment right now and think of the names that you'd have. I'd add Angie, probably add Garth too. I suspect you have some names.